Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and other musicians, uncover their life stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, then stick around. You're in the right place. If you're enjoying this show and you'd like to support it, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/support. And for information on advertising, visit everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. We have the one and only, the lovely Sarah Borges with us. She is a great rock and roll artist, very cool human being, and she's going to be a lot of fun today. Couple of quick announcements, and I'll tell you a little bit about Sarah. First of all, I want to thank our mutual friend, Eric Roscoe Amble, for hooking us up and putting this together. And also make sure if you are listening, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe to subscribe to the show. If you're watching us on YouTube, hit the subscribe button and also the little icon that looks like a bell that helps out on the YouTube logarithm or algorithm, whatever. Logarithm, that's like 11th grade. What is it?
Algebra.
No, the next one. Trigonometry. No. Wow, there's some glitch running into me today to think of that. Oh. Anyway, tell you about Sarah Borges. She's gone from front woman to solo act to front woman again. She successfully navigated the weird road that winds from emerging artist to veteran performer. She's made seven records and racked up countless touring miles. She has an Americana Music Award nomination, multiple Boston Music Awards and song credits on TV shows on The Sons of Anarchy and The Night Shift. Bands like Los Straight Jackets and Big Sandy and his Fly Right Boys have brought her out on the road with them. Cowboy laureates Steve Berlin and Dave Alvin have collaborated with her. In the last few years, she's been married and divorced, become a mom, and gotten sober. This woman's got her hands full. she doesn't sit down for very long, which is why I like you. Her sound's been described as walking that fine line between country and punk, but to me personally, she's a very solid, you know, to me, I'm older, indie rock and roller, man. She belts it out. She gives 110%. Great performer. I've watched some videos of you on YouTube. I listened to two of your records. I listened to Sarah Borges and the Broken Singles, Love's Middle Name, and I listened to Good and Dirty. Great, great EP. So thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, Craig. I'm so happy to be here.
Likewise. You had a birthday party, I can see.
Yes, we did. My son turned 9. And so we're leaving them up all year because who doesn't want something festive right about now?
Right about now. Absolutely. Well, happy birthday to you, son. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hey, so how did you first get started in the music business? And what was like your first break, if you want to call it that?
God. So I started playing indie rock. You're so spot on. When I was in college, and it was the 90s, and it was Boston, and it was such a hotbed of talent. Bands like Morphine and Buffalo Tom and Throwing Muses were all really popular, and you could still see them in the local club. So that was sort my focal point and what I tried to use as a mold for what I wanted to do. But so I did that for a long time and toiled in obscurity. And then I started, you know, I probably did that for 5-6 years or whatever. And I started when I was in college. And then I stayed in Boston after that and got introduced to Americana music and tried my hand at writing it and was lucky enough to just be, you know, fairly competent at it and get some notice pretty quickly. So we made a record, which led to us getting a record deal and then going on tour. And then now here we are. So I guess that big break was once I started playing Americana music, which was something I was still learning about, that kind of launched us onto the touring schedule that we do now.
Well, that's pretty, you're a very prolific writer. I mean, you've got, 7 records, I said here.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big catalog.
Yeah. I think I just say the same thing over and over again. So many of the songs are like, you're a big jerk. I fucking hate you. I've got issues. But
who doesn't have issues? At least you get like to constructively take them out, even if it's the same issue over and over again.
I listen to these songs and I think about like the people they were based on or who they're about and stuff. and just think like, what was I thinking? None. I'm so glad I worked through that one.
Do you ever stop? I'm 56 and I'm like waiting to stop. You know, what's the date I'm finished working on all my issues? You know, like I could see on my deathbed, wait, I didn't do this today. You know, yeah. I forgot to do this reading, this passage or something like that.
Yeah. It's become so hard with, I'm such a big proponent of therapy and I feel like it, you know, it's really changed my life, but I wish that it were more readily available in the quarantine times that we're in. I'm having to do the telehealth thing and it's not the same. I miss my lady. I miss seeing her. I miss her office. It was such a big part of my week.
Interesting. Yeah. So you're not finding it just as effective on the on the Zoom or whatever.
Well, we do it on the phone. And it's a little bit harder when I'm like looking at the laundry or the dishes to really turn inward and think,
oh, yeah,
like, how do you feel, you know, as opposed to scheduling a time to sit and just be there with the person.
Well, we need to put this out to her right now because she might listen to this. We need you to be available on Zoom. It's much more effective. Yeah, totally. Or at least FaceTime. My God, I couldn't imagine having a therapy appointment talking to a phone, actually.
Yeah, luckily we had met before, and I know him fairly well. You're just yelling into the void at that point. Like, help me! We had met before, so I know who I'm talking to.
Right.
But had we not, I would be even harder.
Yeah, I couldn't even do these interviews. Like, cause once in a while, people say, "Oh, they'll only meet over the phone." I'm like, "I'm sorry, it's not going to be a fit."
Yeah.
How do you? You know, how do you have a conversation without, I mean, there's so much nonverbal, especially in a situation like therapy, there's so much nonverbal stuff that's as important, if not more important.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, so many people right now, because of the situation that we're in with the quarantine, are struggling from that lack of connection. I see it in my grandma's 95. And so in an effort to keep her safe, she lives alone. And she hasn't seen a lot of people. She's lonely. She's stressed. And the efforts to keep her safe are just making her life really, you know, hard. So stuff like that. I think people all of all ages and for many different reasons are just struggling with that. It's hard to be alone.
Oh, hell yeah. I think there's a song in there for whatever that's worth.
It's hard to be alone. Yeah, I know.
No, the whole thing with your grandmother and just the isolation. I'm thinking there's something in there.
She watched a Facebook live stream that I did the other day.
And, cool.
On Facebook, you can post your emotion, like so-and-so is feeling this while doing this. And it said she was feeling lonely while watching the Facebook live stream. And I was like, oh God, man. That's terrible.
That's cool that she could do it. My mother-in-law is 86 and she just keeps calling me instead of my wife. So your grandmother's on top of her shit with this, let me tell you.
Yeah.
She's calling me and saying, Tesco has something on sale. I'm like, oh, that's really cool, Mom. Like, I'm like, why is she? She goes, what is my wife going to do with this information? She's here. She's not in Tesco. Anyway.
Tesco? Isn't that a British company?
Yeah, they're in England. Yeah, my wife's from England. Yeah.
Oh.
I got an import.
I think I bought a cucumber sandwich from them at some point in England, like in the little grocery.
Yeah, they're so kind of cool. It's kind of weird there. Like they sell mayonnaise in a tube and mustard in a tube.
Oh, the mustard in a tube. Roscoe turned me on to this mustard. He gets this French mustard. It's called Le Moutard Fort. And it's really, really strong mustard, but it comes like toothpaste.
Yeah, it's really weird when you get that stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Love it.
All right. So we talked about this. When I listen to you, you're an indie artist with Americana influences, but your vibe is punk and indie. It's very free spirited. It's not constrained. It's very like, it's very comforting listening to your music because I know you're giving me you.
Oh, geez.
You know?
That's a really kind thing to say. And
that's how
you.
I feel. When I
no, listen. I believe you. That's why I like interviewing with you. You know,
that's I haven't screwed it up in 25 minutes. What were, you know, before nowadays, there's like so many micro categories. Is that a challenge or was that a challenge early on as far as defining your sound? Like when I was younger, we'd go out and like, yeah, this is great. But the genre was not as important. Not so today.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the reasons is that people discover music based on algorithms so much now.
Yeah.
And if you don't match that particular algorithm, you'll never get found in the pile, which sucks. But, you know, the old days of when you turn up on a bill that with some a band that's like-minded, those still happen. Obviously not right now, but yeah. But going back to what you originally asked, I think, you know, we struggled so many ways. I think I made it unnecessarily hard when I was younger, and we had a deal with Sugar Hill Records, which was probably the high point of our career.
Wait, the rap?
That's just Sugar Hill. This is Sugar Hill Records, which is part of the Welt Group.
Okay.
But now it's part of Concord Music Group. But they had, like, you know, legacy artists like Dolly Parton or Willie Nelson, but also had, you know, other more, I don't want to say artists that were more our contemporaries as well. Hmm. So, but, you know, they really threw a lot of money behind us and hired the big PR firm, and we were touring a lot, and I was probably 29 or 30. But one of the things that was so hard is that on any given record, we would have country songs and blues songs and rock songs. So the radio station would have a song that they liked to play, but there was no follow-up afterwards that would fit their format. We ran into that a lot. We ran into, you know, publications that just didn't really know what to do with us. And I think I could have made it easier. Not that I had to be contrived or I had to kind of limit myself, but I think there's a way to be smart about what you put out if you're aiming to sustain yourself a little bit. Yeah. But we didn't do that. And that's okay too. You know, it doesn't really matter in the end, but it's such a journey that it doesn't really matter in the end.
But let me ask you this. You probably are a little bit of a rebel, right?
I was a really good student and a really good kid. And then I got a little bit older and discovered music, and it sort of uncorked in me some kind of rebel thing. And that's partially because I didn't take lessons very much, and I don't know a lot about music theory. So guitar wise, there was a sort of, you know, defensive portion of me that was like, I don't care. I'll just play whatever the fuck I want. I don't care if it's not a real chord. And as I've gotten older, I've let go of that a little bit more. But that's how I started. Yeah, from that place, I'd say.
Well, because if you're a rebel and someone tells you, hey, you need to do this, and you're younger,
yeah,
there's no way you're going to – like, I would never – like, I still hate being told what to do. And you know, but when I was younger, I would, like, say, oh, now I'm going to do just opposite because you want me to do this. And that's got to be a – you know, if you're a musician, you're young, and you're like, someone's telling you, oh, do this. It's almost like a recipe to make sure they don't do that.
Well, and I think the inner workings of the music industry, when you get a good look at them, they're gross in a lot of ways. Yeah. And so it's like a double rebellion. Like, I want to be honest and keep my integrity. I don't want to be something I'm not. Yeah. And you're telling me that I need to make a more marketable package for myself. And that seems antithetical to what I'm about. So,
right.
But we didn't do ourselves any favors, me especially. You know, I would like, I just pulled some shit moves. Like, I got in a fight at our party in New York City. You're we were awesome. Courting a new booking agent, and
Bravo.
We were courting a new booking agent, and he turned me down. So I got real drunk, and then I spat in a guy's face and said a bad word to me, and he punched me in the head. And
are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, my terrible. God. Did somebody, like, fuck him up? Or that's not cool. I mean,
he had all the rings, and he got me right in the temple.
What's wrong with that guy?
Well, I spat in his face, you know.
I know, but you got a drunk woman spitting in your face. It's like, you know, you're not supposed to, like, go full on, you know.
Rambo.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if it's a dude, yeah. I mean, you know, there's guy rules. There's certain guy rules, like, that's just not cool. It's like when I've been married a long time, but when you're single, don't look at another woman when she's with a guy. There's, like, guy rules that you just not to be a dick, and that's
those
one
are
of them.
People rules. Oh, I think too. Like, I think so too. Like, I remember saying to some guy I was dating one time, like, when you are with me, I want you to carry around in your back pocket the pride you have in being my partner. And also, it also puts a shield around you where you don't look.
Yeah.
And people know.
Right. Right. You know? Can't. Yeah. I can't believe Yeah. Do you want to out him here?
I don't know who the guy was, but we both got thrown out of the club. It's our record release show in New York City. We're so, my bandmates were just like, what, you know, what are you doing? That's terrible behavior.
And the rest of the night, they're like, where's Sarah? How do you explain?
We all left. We had just got bundled into the van. They took me away and I put a bag of frozen peas on my head at a friend's apartment.
Oh,
and
my God. Wow.
Good behavior. But I don't even really know how we got on this subject. Just that as part of working out issues, which
therapy.
Is the thing about therapy, and part about music, you know, when you're young, you just have all this wellspring of feeling that you don't know what to do with. It just comes out of you.
Hey, man, even when you're older, unless you really work on, like, you could tell, like, when you're speaking, you said, oh, I was feeling defensive. Somebody who hasn't, like, worked on themselves doesn't speak like that.
Yeah. I mean, I really try, and I try to be measured, especially as a parent. You know, you never want to yell at your kid because you're having a bad day.
Yeah.
And you want to teach them skills that makes their life easier as they grow up.
Yeah.
But it's hard. You got to check yourself like 100 times a day and be like, what am I feeling here? Why am I acting this way? You know, it's become second nature to me and to anyone who's done anything, any kind of self work, but it is a job. Yeah,
it is. But at least the good thing is when you sit and check with yourself, you got the answer. You know, you're checking with yourself because you know you got the answer. It's not, oh, this guy's a real asshole. What, you know, what's going on? Why did I react like that? He might be an asshole, but that's a separate issue.
Yeah, there's such freedom in being able to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
Or this is out of my control. You know, it's like those are two of the most freeing things I've learned, that you can only just control what's going on with you.
Well, hell yeah. I'm just writing down something you said. It was cool. You said there's such freedom in being able to say, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I say, I don't know so much. I'll tell you that before our interview today, I called Roscoe Amble up and I'm sure we'll talk about guitars specifically at some point, but I have one of his guitars that he's so graciously lent me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And it's a really stellar guitar. And so I said, I need you to educate me because I'm going to talk to Craig on Monday and I can't go in blind. So these are all my notes about the history of the guitar.
Oh my God. That is very impressive.
Yeah.
It's very impressive. Now I'm going to make sure that we talk about this because I would not want this to be in vain.
Well, don't expect too much. I internalized some of it.
It's all good. It's totally good.
But I did say to him, I don't know. I don't know anything about this guitar. I really need your help.
And that's cool. And he knows everything about guitar. So you're talking with the right guy for sure. Some of your records you release under your name, solo, and others with the Broken Singles. What's the history about that there? And why do you do one or the other?
So the first record was just released under my name, which was Silver City. And we hadn't come up with a band name yet, and we didn't have a solid band. It's always been me and this guy, Binky. He plays bass. He's my partner in crime up at the front of the stage. And he's my best friend, and he's my touring partner. And so basically, if he's on the record, it's a Broken Singles record, because we've kind of determined that if there's the two of us, we've got the band.
Okay.
But the record I made first, I started without him. I didn't know him yet. I made an interim record, a couple interim records that he didn't play on. And I felt like I couldn't call it the Broken Singles without him.
That was cool.
So there might be a couple of exceptions of things that have been released either way, but that's usually my rule. If Binky's on it,
it's Broken Singles. You know what? That's really cool. I bet you he appreciates that. I know you guys are buddies, so he's probably not thinking like that.
He doesn't appreciate shit.
No, but what you were talking about a while ago, you said, hey, you know, the CD side of the music business, that doesn't go on a lot.
No, I know. I appreciate people who do stuff like that.
Yeah. I think good people that have been around all do, because that doesn't happen a lot. And that's really cool. It's like a, you know, nod of the hat to Binky.
There's a network of people that I've come to know as I play music, and obviously Roscoe being one of them, and other guys that I play with too. But that's just how they are at their core, you know. Just as I would do that for Binky, Roscoe has lent me this guitar because I broke mine in great fashion on stage. It was very dramatic. And I didn't have another guitar. And so he's lent me this guitar that I've had now for a fair amount of time. And I know he has more guitars that he can play, but this is a special one. Yeah. So I really appreciate that. So that's kind
cool. Hey, I have to ask you this only because it's like such a popular topic. I normally don't ask about these things unless you want to, but has your career been different for you because you're a woman in your perception versus if you were a guy? Tell me.
I don't even know if I've had time to like distill it down to what I think, but I do know that the prettier you are, the more skin you show, the more flirtatious you're willing to be, the easier it is. Wow. And I'm okay to play that role sometimes. When I was younger, it's fun to be that person, especially when other people are buying the drinks and you get to wear a sparkly outfit and everybody loves you, you know. But as you get older and you age out of that, you really see that people are attuned to find the young, pretty, sparkly thing. And I don't know if that happens so much with dudes. Dudes are more, at any age, they can be sparkly and exciting. I think for women and girls especially, there's some appeal that society has set forth that as you become an older woman, it's not accessible to you.
Yeah.
So I'm 42 and I'm starting to feel that a little bit, you know.
You look great, man. Don't even think of that bullshit. Yeah.
And I still wear the little outfits because it makes me feel free. It makes me feel good.
Good.
But, you know, I think being a mom too, kind of like it's really hard to do your career and have a child, and it's hard to go on tour and have a child. And that's something that I don't know if men feel, not because they're not equally good caregivers, but there's just a visceral feeling you have about leaving your child that's horrible.
Being a mom is the toughest job. Let me tell you, I see my wife and I don't know how she's done it. It's really hard to be a mom.
It's hard to be a parent in general. But I think
mom is tougher, to be honest with you, because there's more involved in maternal delivery, and there's more care that comes naturally with maternal things that guys just don't think about. And I'm a very caring person, but I would never think to the extent my wife marvels me. Even still, our kids are 28, 30, and 20, and our granddaughter's 6, and I see her with all four of them still, and I'm like, how the hell do you do that?
Yeah.
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 And she didn't have a great, you know, she's not modeling stuff. So that's even more, I'm like, holy crap. So yeah, I think it's different. I totally understand that.
Yeah. It's just, you feel when you're away from them, you feel that loss so keenly. You feel like you're missing a part of yourself. And then, but it's obviously the best job ever. So
yeah,
that's okay.
Very cool. It's funny that you said that about my daughter. Let's say she's 20. She's telling me now, well, I went to the auto mechanic and, you know, of course, because I'm a girl, they treat me better. And I'm like,
yeah,
I don't want her to know that though.
Oh my God. It's about harnessing it. I mean, if people are going to choose to be as unevolved as that, where appearance plays a role in their decision-making process, I'll fucking use it. I'm going to wear a party dress to the mechanic and get a real good deal.
That's
and
what she does. That's what she takes advantage of it. But, you know, as a dad, it's like, ugh, I don't want to hear that, you know?
Yeah. It's gross. I don't know. We watch a lot of like old cartoons and stuff, my son and I, or movies that maybe we watched. Willow, that, you know, the movie from it was a Ron Howard movie from 82, I think.
I didn't see the movie, but I do remember it.
Val Kilmer is in it. But some of the attitudes towards women just in that movie in 1982, my son, we were watching it and he was like, I don't get it. I'm like, you don't want to.
Yeah, it's not for you don't need to know that. Yeah, I know. No. It's weird. I know what it is with me. I don't mind. I know I'm not immune. I know how life works, but when I have a problem, when it's a guy my age checking my daughter out, that's what I have a big problem with. That when you're 56, you shouldn't be looking at a 20-year-old man. I'm sorry, that's it's like gross to me, you know.
Well, I think maybe we should just get rid of, like, it's fine to appreciate in your mind the female form or the male form and stuff, but you don't have to say it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still get flattered sometimes if someone pays me a comment about my physical appearance, but I'm willing to trade that in for a society where we just don't talk about each other's appearance in a good or bad way. Like, because people can't really, they're just made how they're made, you know, and commending someone on being more attractive than the next person is like, that's fucked up.
Well, I don't have a problem with someone's complimenting, but if they're like salivating, man, and you're like, this is a kid, you know.
But it goes with the territory, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think people know how to draw that line. So maybe we just need to stop doing it all together. I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, I feel glad that I have a boy child because I won't have to go through that. But
A boy child.
My mom and I are very active in his life, and we're priming him to be a feminist, because if I ever catch him like catcalling a lady, there's going to be a problem.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, my kids are not. They don't. My sons don't do that. They're pretty cool like that. Yeah, I would be upset. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So in the last few years, you've been married and divorced, became a mom, and got sober. I want to ask you some questions about each of those things, but only to the extent you're comfortable. So if, you know, please feel
anything is fine. And I'll tell you if I don't like it.
Yeah. Just say pass or whatever. We've had like 60 guests on the show talk about getting sober. And I have a YouTube playlist called Musician Sobriety Stories. And that's one of the top, you know, 'cause what happened was people started emailing me in, or just listeners would, you know, comments here and there like, hey man, I was really happy I heard this. I'm struggling right now and this got me through, you know, and I don't know anybody whose family has not been touched by addiction of some sort. So, and mine is not immune to that. So I was like, man, anything I can do to put that message out there, I'm really happy. Mm-hmm. So, that's why I like talking about it. I assume it was marriage, then divorce. Where in that sequence did sobriety come in?
Oh, I think I was not an active alcoholic during my marriage. And, you know, it's not a secret too that my partner was also an alcoholic. And so that really just contributed to the demise of the marriage.
Oh yeah.
So I got sober 3 weeks before our divorce became final, because I just didn't think I could handle it drinking the way I was. But we were ill prepared to have a child. We had some really tragic things happen in our family life in terms of parents dying or relatives dying and things that were just too much of a load for us to bear, I think. So we couldn't keep the marriage together. And then the process of getting divorced was very dramatic and very prolonged. And that really escalated my alcoholism to a point where I felt like I was not able to go on. And I did just have that dark of night revelation moment where I was like, if I don't quit drinking, I will die. So
had you had that? Was that the first, was that the first time you'd had that thought?
It was the first time I'd actively had the thought that suicide seemed like a real option. And I've heard other people describe it this way too, but it's like a black monster in the room, and it's always there. And sometimes it's close and sometimes it's far, but it's always there and it won't leave. And that's when you know you really got a problem, I think. And that problem may not even be alcoholism. Maybe it's mental illness or some other kind of addiction. But if that's an omnipresent thought in your life, then there's something that you need to address. So the only thing I could think of to change was drinking. And you don't realize when you're in drinking what havoc it wreaks with your body and your central nervous system and your state of mind, that constant cycle of being hungover and being drunk and the guilt and the shame and then the wild behavior. You just have no idea who you are anymore. So I felt like going into the divorce, if I was going to stand in front of the judge and take this huge next step, I had to make a choice for my son and me to do it. And then, you know, and that was what I did. And I had tried a couple of times to get sober prior to that, but that was the one that took.
Thanks. What do you think about that time that you had the courage to do that? Because it takes a lot of courage to get sober. Because now somebody once told me, that was going through, I think in AA. And they said that they got this in the program that you initially, whatever your drug of choice is, that's your solution to your problems. Mm-hmm. And then that solution becomes your new problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So how did you have the courage to like, that's a lot. It's a big thing to unwind.
I think, you know, you come to this point in your life where you just really get to the very core of who you are, and you either want to live or you don't. And it was just a simple choice like that, where I felt like I couldn't leave this earth because I had a child and because I had enough people that loved me, that it would just crush. So I don't even think I did it for myself, but I just knew that if I took my own life, it would just be horrible. It would be a horrible, it was the wrong choice for me. So, but I couldn't live not sober. So, and that's the mantra that I kept in my head over the early days of sobriety was, if you take another drink, you will die. And I just kept saying it to myself over and over again. And I still have to say it occasionally, but I believe that. Yeah. So I made the choice to live in like a bare bones, just screaming into the void moment. Yeah. So, and thankfully I haven't had to do it again, because I don't know if I could do that again. It was the hardest thing I've ever had to do.
Was it tough asking for help?
You know, I had gone to AA a few times. I had gone to AA drunk, as I know some people do. I've done it, and that's okay.
I mean, I would say most meetings have people that are in AA, NA. That's why they're there, you know, because right. they have a problem with a substance. Yeah.
I mean. Right. I would go drunk and just cry. And then, mm-hmm. you know, I had a couple of really bad experiences when I started AA. I had a guy like get in my car and try to pick me up at a meeting. And he's like, I could sponsor you. And I was like, I don't think this is going
to work. That's a bad sale.
It was terrible.
No, this will be great. It'll be great.
It turned me off, you know?
Of course. Oh my God.
And then I've never done all the steps. I've never completed the program, and it's a desire that I have. It's funny we should be talking about this, but more on that in a second. But I went to this old ladies meeting. I finally found a meeting that was comfortable for me. And the median age was probably 80. And some of these, wow. these older ladies, they're like, I used to have a bottle in my purse in the 40s. And just so funny. They were Holy hysterical. God. But they took care of me. And yeah. they were so kind. And through them, I sort of saw that you don't lose your sense of humor when you're sober. And you don't necessarily become any less interesting. So I stayed with them for about 6 months. And then every once in a while, when I feel like I need a check-in, we did an Outlaw Country cruise recently.
Right.
And I went to a meeting there because I was surrounded by people who were drinking and having what appeared to be the time of their lives. And I was like, I need to check in.
So they had a meeting on the boat.
They do.
That's really,
they really
cool.
Take care of you.
That yeah. is really, wow. That's important. That's great.
Yeah. A lot of festivals too, that are multi-day festivals or even single day festivals, they'll have a meeting because there's so many of us.
Oh my God. And it's nothing but drugs all around you, or booze, or whatever. Yeah.
Drinking. Yeah. You get paid in beer, you get drink tickets. Yeah. So it's like encouraged.
Wow. Hey, well, good for you. Pat on Thanks. Your back for saying, hey, I need to get to a meeting here on the out. Cause it's, you know, it's real easy to say, man, I'm on vacation. I'm on an out. You took care of yourself. That's a huge thing. Self-care is like, people don't realize how important that is. It's not just like, oh, self-care. Like, you know, it's pretty important in your life.
Well, you also have to heed the reminders that the universe gives you. And I'm on this cruise. I'm having the time of my life, but I chance to meet this man who's there on the cruise with his son. And he starts to explain to me that he had another son who had died from an overdose not long before. And his son who was with him had obtained some tramadol in Mexico on the last cruise and had a seizure on the boat. But he's still there chugging a beer, smoking a cigar. And he's like, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know, but I know as an AA person, I just have to let him have his own journey. But we got to talking about AA, and we got to talking about how I hadn't done the steps and how I hadn't gotten a sponsor because I didn't know how. And he really just made me feel at ease and good. And he's like, well, why don't you come have a coffee with me in the morning, you know? And I was like, fuck it, it's at 9 a.m. And I was like, you know, that this man has been sent into my path by the universe. I'm going to go with him. So we did, and it was great.
That's really cool. Yeah, I try to be very open to the messages that the universe sends, you know. I think it's so important, and I didn't do that for many, many years of my life, and I'm so happy I do now. It makes things easier, you know.
It does. I try to walk the fine line between magical thinking and observing the signs of the universe, where it's like I can get into, like, if I don't step on that red rock, I'm going to die tomorrow. You know, like, I can
that's
get
OCD.
That. That's OCD, totally. But you got to separate your OCD from your universe messages.
That's really funny. Because you can get into an argument with, like, your higher power. I don't want to step on that rock. No, you really need to. That's funny.
Yeah. So funny. So you just have to be quiet and still. So much of the time you're like, oh. This again. I just want to have a good time.
Yeah. Hey, I'm happy for you. And thank you so much for sharing that. That was really big of you to do. And I'm so happy that you feel so much better.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so grateful. I just had 5 years in August, on August 9th.
Awesome. Awesome. Congratulations. That's the best.
Yeah. My only worry now, I feel good about my sobriety and that I can maintain it. And I, you know, go to, as I said, I love therapy, but my son now, because he's got two parents who have struggled with addiction, he's 9. I started drinking heavily when I was probably 14. So he's not got very far before this is going to become a real issue for him, and finding the language to talk to him that he can hear that doesn't sound uncool, or, you know, that's our next challenge.
Can you bring them to a meeting? Or like they have NARA teen, they have like teen meetings too.
I've never thought of that, but that's a brilliant idea.
Well, because this is the way to introduce, I'm just kind of thinking that the part of your life, it's, you know, that's the way to, you know, it's part of your life, and that's what you want to talk to him about, right?
Right. I know. I mean, I do. I drink O'Doul's. I like the O'Doul's, or sometimes the Busch at A.
Like, is that like non-alcoholic?
Non-alcoholic beer. Yeah. Okay. I know some folks in the program frown upon it, but it helps me. But he's always like,
it's no one's business, you know, really.
I know. But he's like, what is that? Like, it's beer without alcohol. Like, okay. And I know the question is coming, but that, you know, it'll be interesting.
Do you belch after you drink that?
I do. It's very, because
I'll clear this up for the listeners later.
But I'll have to work on a good one. I know.
Yeah. You know,
so
I'm sure
I did that during a drinking show.
Well, it was in your bio. It's not like I, you know, like Roscoe or somebody on the back sly end told me about it. I read it in your bio. Or like on Wikipedia, something like that.
Mm-hmm. If it's on Wikipedia, it must be true.
It must be true. I always ask. That's why people, I always say, hey, is your bio there true? Because there's no barrier to entry to that, you know? And, that's interesting though about your kid. Yeah. You'll be fine. You're so sincere. So it's going to work.
I hope so. He's got a really good dad too, you know. My son is smart and capable. We're choosing to keep him home this year as opposed to sending him to school. So that too will be, I'm not going to play shows now for a little bit, obviously, because it's not an option. Touring's not an option. So we've chosen to keep him home for the year and school him. So this is kind of, we're starting on something entirely new, but I'll get to know him in a different way.
That might make you drink, I got to tell you. fair warning.
Well, fourth grade math is hard. We did a little bit last year. Third grade math, I was like, I don't fucking know. Fractions.
Oh, my God. Yeah, because they can't go out. There's no, like, friends and hanging out or anything, is there?
We've started to create, like, a little pod where he can go, good. Play video games 6 feet apart from his friend on the
Thank
porch.
Thank God. That's great.
But it's going to be snow soon, so that's not going to be an option.
It's August.
I don't know. It's August. I'm thinking ahead, Craig.
slow down, Sarah. Relax.
Be in the moment.
Yeah, be in the moment. Damn it.
Right.
Well, thanks. Thank you for sharing your journey, man. And I wish you nothing but continued success. You're so cool. You're going to, you'll be fine, whatever you do. I know that.
Thank you.
You're a very strong person.
Thank you.
Biggest changes for you as a result of getting sober?
I used to think I was so crazy. You know, I was like, I'm crazier than a shithouse rat. I have so many problems. And then all my problems, not all of them, but the bulk of my problems just magically went away.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I realized that either I made the problems or how I was reacting to the problems was making them worse. And that every bit of that had to do with drinking.
Yeah. The amount of I've noticed the amount of drama that an addict has in their life is incrementally greater than like other non-addicts, for sure. It seems like that anyway.
I think there's something about, for me as an addict, that I crave excitement. And I one of the things I would always think when I was drinking is like, I'm having a party. Nobody's coming to the party, but I'm having a party. So fuck you. then doing, I got music on, I'm this dancing, I'm, you know.
This but, is so funny.
But you crave excitement a little bit, and you got to be wicked careful not to, stir shit up in your regular life just because you're looking for excitement. I've learned to appreciate that life can be calm and nice, and that's okay.
You know what? I've never said this on the air, but I'll put it out there. I would encourage you, if you're interested, look at the ACA program.
Yeah.
Because it addresses that very thing specifically.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. So ACA for people, it used to be called ACOA, Adult Children of Alcoholics and Dysfunctional Families. And a lot of people that grew up with heavy dysfunction, and I'm certainly one of them, it's high stress. This is what I've learned anyway. It was a very high stress environment. And I could function great in a high stress environment. The problem is, once you leave that environment, nobody like comes along. There's no like, hey, by the way, the rest of the world is not like that. You don't have to function in a high stress environment. So what you wind up doing is subconsciously making decisions that lead to high stress,
mm-hmm.
because that is your norm.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's what I did.
That's 100%. I mean, it sounds so spot on. And if I think about myself, one of the other choices I made as a sober person is not to see my dad. And he had been someone who had been very supportive of our band and had gone to Germany with us and, just really was at every show and stuff. And as our relationship sort of started to fall apart, probably because I came to some realizations when I got sober, but removing him from my life has made my life just incredibly less stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a hard thing to do, when you're drunk, I think because it's so painful.
Yeah.
But when you're sober, it's easier.
Well, a lot of people, I'm not one of them because I haven't spoke to my family of origins in close to 35 years, but, because they're toxic. And I think a lot of people say, oh, how can you do that, man? Because you didn't deal with what I dealt with. And, sometimes people change, but a lot of times they don't. And like, it's just almost like meeting somebody else it's like meeting a stranger. If there's that much distance between the two of you, it's like you have to evaluate when you're talking to a new person. Hey, is this person going to bring like some positive vibes to a conversation or negative? And if it's negative, it's like, no, it's probably not going to go much further than this. So I think that's good. I think that's safe and smart. Some people are just assholes and they're never going to change.
Yeah. I always try to come at it with empathy, and like succeed only 10% of the time, but I'm like, I'm sure this person has their own internal issues that they're dealing with that's causing them to react in this way.
Sure.
But I can't take that on because I got enough of shit of my own here.
Yeah.
So, and you can see them coming a mile away when it is a toxic person. Like, there's just so many markers that if you're attuned to it, it's very clear.
Yeah, that's right. Their problems and their crisis is not your crisis. You know, you can't, what's the other thing that you didn't cause it, right? You didn't, you didn't cause it. You can't cure it, but you can contribute to it. Right. So it's, his shit is not your stuff. You know? Yeah. I agree with you. I think it's safe. Dude, I'm getting therapy here.
All right. I know. I think that's my next career. I like therapy so much that I become one.
This is the therapy issue. So you grew, where'd you grow up? Like,
where I grew up in Taunton, Massachusetts.
Spell that.
T-A-U-N-T-O-N. The T is silent, evidently. The second, Taunton.
Yeah, I hear. Taunton. Okay. What was... go ahead, sorry.
It's right near Rhode Island. It's a working class town. Yeah. So it's in Massachusetts, and it's down about 40 miles from Boston. And my parents are divorced. I'm an only child.
Oh, wow. And
I went through school there, and I went to Emerson College in Boston when I was 17, and I've not been home since, really. So, I mean, I've gone home for little interim periods and stuff, but.
Sure. Yeah, that's, you're like very self-reliant.
You know, it's so hard because you want to be respectful of, you know, my mom is a very important part of my life. And so I always want to toe that line of acknowledging what she's given me in terms of watching my son so I can go on tour.
Sure.
And being very supportive of my career. But I also don't want to lie and say, you know, my growing up was wonderful because it, you know, I think my mom was a real good mom and stuff. And my dad was a pretty shitty dad. If I had to characterize it, it wasn't horrible all the time. It wasn't horrible, but it's not the kind of growing up I want my child to have.
Oh yeah. I totally get that. Yeah. And you got to actively ward that off.
Yeah. Because I'm sure you've probably had this feeling when your child does something that just infuriates you. And there is that brief second where you can explode into anger and it would feel so fucking good to have that release of like, the fuck is wrong with you? Why did you do that? You know, but you just cannot go there.
Yeah. I did do that because I would yell because to me, I was like, well, I wasn't hitting them. I wasn't beating the fuck out of them. So I was like a step ahead.
You were winning.
I was winning. Yeah. That was not winning at all. But I read a book. Unfortunately, I got turned on to it too late, called Love and Logic, about disciplining kids. And the thing the guy said, and I read it in time for my daughter, who was exponentially more difficult than both my sons together. Anyway, but the book said, don't feel like you need to put a punishment on them right away. And I was like, yeah, that's pretty smart. And they said, because it just stresses you out. I'm like, yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
And they were like, just tell them, hey, there's going to be a consequence for this. I don't really know what it is yet, but we'll deal with it later. And I was like, wow, that's pretty brilliant.
Well, and the flip side is it gives the kid like this moment of terror where they have to wait.
Yes. Right. They do. Yeah. But I thought that was great. That really made a huge change. That was when I first started trying to lower stress in my life. That was like one of the first things I did unknowingly, but that's what happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm always
looking for ways to lower stress. That's a great,
Love and Logic. And he writes, it's like Love and Logic for babies, Love and Logic for teenagers, Love and Logic. I think he's even got a gender, one for males, one for females. It was great. It really was great. Now there's a little bit of religion in there, which I'm not a religious person, but you just ignore that part. The concepts I thought were great. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Did you know early on you wanted to be a musician?
I did. I did a lot of theater and chorus in school starting from a very young age. I remember saying to my mom, I was little, I sat up in my bed and I was like, I'm going to be famous. My mom was like, okay. It's like, no, mom, you got to believe me. I really am. So I don't know if I wanted to be famous so much as I knew I just wanted to have this as my job. So I got to music by way of school stuff, chorus and band or chorus and drama club And I did a lot of that, so much of that in high school. It really saved me socially.
Yeah.
Because it was such a family of choice. Yeah. And then I went to Emerson College with the intent of doing that more, but ended up getting a degree in radio.
Really? What'd you do with, what made you go for a degree in radio?
Because I could do live music engineering and they had a really great live music week. So I could learn how to like mic a drum kit and do stuff like that. So, you know, it gave me a little bit of information for later in life. I feel like college was just, I socially learned more than I did academically, but it was worth it.
That's cool.
Worth the student loan.
That's, it was Emerson College.
Yeah.
That was cool. When did you start playing music?
So when I was probably, I was in high school and my mom had a boyfriend who played guitar and sang, and he would come over with his guitars and just sit in our living room and smoke clove cigarettes and play Neil Young.
Jakarta.
Yeah.
Was that like, what it was? Jakarta?
No. What was the kind? I can picture him. God, those were so good.
Remember God. Yeah, they were like, they were strong as hell. They were big, thick things. You'd smoke it last about a day almost, you know? It was like.
Yeah, and because it had the clove, your mouth would get rained with the sugar.
Yeah, so. It was so sweet. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I loved those. I
haven't thought of that in a long time. That's funny to hear. Yeah. God, that's.
And all of his guitars, when you'd open them up, would smell like clove cigarettes.
That's funny. It was awesome. That's funny.
But he taught me like Harvest Moon by Neil Young and House of the Rising Sun. And he gave me enough chords where I could start dicking around on my own and like express my teenage angst by writing songs.
Yeah.
And then I think I played my first show when I was a senior in high school, like that summer. And then I played more shows in college and started like, you know, getting serious about it, but trying to work on making a band and stuff. So I was, you know, 16, 17.
Yeah.
And then just kept going.
And you know, what's cool is you've never, I bet you never considered being a side person. It was always like, I'm going to be in a band and like play my music.
Yeah. But I will say, as I've played with Roscoe, and a lot of times when we do our shows, we share the front person duties. So he'll play a couple songs, I play a couple songs, and then the other person just plays guitar. So for him, that's very natural because he's, you know, an incredible soloist and great guitar player. But for me, just playing rhythm guitar while he's singing and playing lead guitar, it's really refreshing because I get to just be one with the band, and oh, it is a good hang. I don't know if I could do it all the time, but for those however many songs in a set, it's fun.
You're playing your songs though?
I'm playing his songs. So we split the set where I play some of mine. Whoever wrote it sings it.
Okay.
And we'll split the set that way. So it's, you know, my worst nightmare is having to just sing and have no guitar, because then what do you do with your hands? Yeah, you know, you got to like make up some kind of, like Peter Wolf has it down, but I can't do it.
He's been doing it like a long, long, long time though.
He has. He's a fixture here in Boston. You see him out in the clubs all the time.
You must know Duke Levine then.
I do.
Yeah, he's a really good guy. Great guitar player.
He's lovely.
Yeah,
he's
really
such a nice guy. He's so quiet and funny. And what a beautiful guitar player.
Yeah, he's a really good guy. That's funny. It's a small world. It's a really small world. I could see you do. Yeah, I think you'd be fine. You have so much energy though when you're singing. You would definitely like rock it without a guitar if you wanted to.
I know. You have to like let yourself go in a way that I don't know if I can. It's like being an actor, you know, like I feel like to be a good actor, you probably just have to let it all hang out, not care what you look like, if you're ugly, if you look stupid. And when you're playing guitar, I have the moves down, so I don't have to worry. But when you have no guitar, I don't know what to do. I stand like this or like this.
No, I think you'd be totally fine because you have your energy is so high. I've watched a lot of videos of you.
You
have high energy. You'd be great.
I miss those high energy shows because what I usually eat and then not having those energy workouts, I'm like, I gained like 5 pounds. What's
COVID?
Yeah. No shows equals like, I can't be eating those French fries. What?
Tell me one or two mistakes that you might've made along the journey musically and like what lessons you learned.
Oh, I think the biggest mistake I made was when, so when we were on Sugar Hill, we had a manager who we'd had for a long time here in Boston named Jeannie Smith. She is lovely. She is lovely. And these are all people who are alive and well and that we're friends with. But, and I, we had a booking agent who's still our booking agent called Mongrel Music. And I got a little big for my britches. And I was like, I'm going to get a fancy manager. I'm going to get a fancy booking agent. And I think we didn't end up staying with either a fancy booking agent or a fancy manager. What we needed to do was just stay with who brought, you know, you dance with the one that brung you. Because they helped us get that far. But I think in that moment, I wanted to grow our band and I really lost sight of the human relationships that are the most important part. So I've openly acknowledged this to these people so they know. But I think I really didn't respect people in that situation. And I always think about it when I think about what not to do.
You know, that honestly sounds like, it sounds like an honest mistake. I mean, that would, it would sound like normally if you want to, I'm from my perspective as a observer, you would think, hey, I need to get better gigs. Let me get somebody that's going to get me bigger and better gigs. Right. That sounds like a pretty honest mistake.
There's a way to do it, I think, where you know, I feel like it's so important to me to let people know how I feel about them and how valued they are to me. And I think in the moment I wasn't there yet. I just kind of was like, okay, we're not going to work with you anymore. And we're going to go on to this bigger.
Yeah. Company. You didn't have the communication skills at that time. Oh, no, you couldn't.
No, I didn't. Yeah. No, I didn't. And thankfully everything came out okay.
Oh, that's good.
You know, and they don't hate me, but shit like that, or just stupid decisions that you don't think through. But that was a big bad choice that I made.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty reasonable mistake.
Actually. Oh, yeah.
I mean, extremely. I'm sure you weren't the first person to let them go for that exact reason.
I know. And if that's my worst, you know, failure, it's not that bad. But
no, it's pretty good.
Little mini ones, like about a lot of it has to do with mistakes I made while I was drinking and my behavior. But I think, I'm sure it's been said so many times before, but letting go of that shame is such a huge part of recovery. So I work on that every day.
Yeah.
Just owning what I did and then making amends where necessary and then trying to process it and let it go.
You know, one thing I've learned from the ACA program is like, it happened to me yesterday. Something happened minor, was not a big deal, but the lesson I learned was huge. I was like, God, you know what? I'm human.
Yeah.
And I never recognized that. I always held myself to this like impossible standard of like how I should react and how, you know, what I should be upset or not upset, you know, just that stress that I had. Right. Sure. And now I'm like, you know, wow, that was really cool. I'm just human. And I felt so good to learn that. It was a simple thing. It was a lesson was big. It was a simple thing that kind of taught it to me. And I, you know, it was great.
Yeah. I mean, that freedom in just saying, I don't know, or I have no idea.
Yeah. And that's cool. That's allowed.
Well, and then recognizing your strengths too, you know, like I can't read directions for shit. When it's time to put something together, it's not my bag. I can't do it, but I am good at other stuff and that's okay. You know,
right. Just, don't shop at IKEA.
Fucking hell, man. They're shit. Like they're good for like rugs, but if you got to put it together, there's always too many screws or not enough screws. It falls apart. I give up.
Yeah. And I'm great. I like doing that stuff and I don't like shopping there for that reason. So forget it. All right. I don't want you to have done all that research for nothing. Tell me about your go-to guitar.
Right. So, well, I'll back us up a step and say when I was 18, this guy showed up at our rehearsal space in Taunton, Mass and said, I have a guitar and an amp in my trunk and it's $150. But it's not metal enough for me. So this was probably like 1994, 1993. And it ended up being like a late, I don't know exactly what year, late 70s, early 80s Guild Songbird guitar.
Okay.
So that's a big mahogany beast. And that was my guitar for a long time. And this is before I learned the merits of having a light guitar. If you're going to play for 2 hours, you know, it's a little tough with that piece of wood on your shoulder. But so we go on the Outlaw Country cruise for the first time. And I decide for the end of our set, I'm going to jump off the drums. And I fell off the drums. Oh. And it's a boat. You forget that it's moving. And right, that wasn't what did the guitar in. But when I got up to kind of like take my bow and say, hey, everybody, I'm okay. I caught my foot in the guitar stand and it knocked it over and it just smashed. And I broke the headstock clean off it.
Okay.
So Roscoe was kind enough to lend me his guitar, which is a Stone Tree. And he has worked with this guy, Scott Platts, to build some guitars that are kind of Roscoe specific. And the one I have is called the Roscoe Special.
Roscoe Special.
Yeah, it looks a lot like a Telecaster, but it's a little bit different shape. And I've never had a guitar that I've always just played what's fallen in my lap. I've never gone to the guitar store and purchased a guitar, but it's been usually a financial issue. Or I've been lucky enough to like inherit a guitar from somebody or whatever. But the Stone Tree is the kind of guitar where, you know, Scott Ross and I were talking, he's like, it has stainless steel frets.
Those and are that really, means, that makes it so much easier to play. Yeah. My God. Yeah.
And the thing stays in tune. Every time I pick it up, it's in tune. When I use a capo on it, it doesn't go out of tune, even if I have to tune with the capo on, you know. The thing is, it's so dependable and so sturdy, and it looks like $1 million. So,
do you have it nearby?
Yeah, I'll show you.
Yeah, yeah, let's check it out.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So it looks like this.
Oh, very cool. It looks like a blonde Tele sort of with P90s.
It does. And then see how it's like a little bit offset too? You
yeah.
So,
and
but
it's got,
yeah.
Is that, it's not an ebony fretboard. I it's a rosewood fretboard, it looks like, right?
I believe so. Yeah. This now you're, so what else? What else can I tell you about this?
Read your notes.
My notes.
we could get a little window, like the little round circle at the bottom, and yeah, pop Roscoe in there. The guitar is weighs 7 pounds, 4 ounces.
right. And so one of the things that I did learn is about the skunk stripe. Do you know about the skunk stripe?
Down the back, yes.
Yeah. I had no idea about that, but he's like, between 1966 and 1968, you know, they made them differently. He gave me the whole rundown and everything.
That's funny.
And Roscoe so obviously loves guitars.
Oh, yeah. He's got a ton.
He's got a ton. But it was so nice to talk to him about like what he likes about the Stone Tree. You know, he was just saying it's very reliable. It's easy to play. And I guess this all started because he and Scott had set out to reproduce the 66, this recreation of this guitar that Roscoe had. It was okay. The first one called a Roscoe Caster.
Okay.
Of the Stone Tree. And if you go to his website, you can look and the three guitars are listed there with pictures.
Oh, that's cool. The Roscoe Special. That sounds like you get something at a diner, you know.
The Roscoe Special, I know. Yeah. But he plays those. He plays other ones too. Mm. But he's really worked with Scott, I think, to come up with stuff that feels good to him to play. And then I'm the happy beneficiary of this loan.
How does that guitar feel?
It feels really good because I can move. And I don't have to worry about like my guild. One of the strings was always coming out, you know, like it wasn't held on there good. Or it was just forever out of tune. And I can really, as you've mentioned, I do like to move around a lot. Yeah. And sometimes I hit shit by accident and this thing is infallible. So I appreciate that.
That's cool. And what do you play out of amp wise?
I have a Little Pro Junior.
Okay.
A Little Pro Reverb, excuse me. Here, I'll show you this little suite.
Yeah, let's do this.
I love it. This is my Pro Junior, and it used to reside at the Lakeside Lounge.
Where that was his bar.
Right. And I think, if I'm not getting the story wrong, Roscoe had a bunch of those at the Lakeside Lounge. And because of like noise complaint situation and space accommodations, he kind of mandated that people use them when they played there. So that's one of the ones that used to exist there. And
that's
there's
great.
A bunch of them. But it's a lot of amp for a little box. And there's nothing more embarrassing than not being able to carry your own amp. I did have a Pro Reverb before. That's why I said that by accident. But that thing is a beast. It's almost a twin.
Yeah.
And so trying to carry that on my own, you have to get help. And as a woman, whatever the word for emasculating is for a woman, that's how it feels.
Yeah. When you have to, yeah, when you can't carry your own amp. But this right. You can carry.
I can carry this and it's no problem. So, but together, you know, that's what I got.
Very cool. Who influences you, like, writing wise? Like, is there any writing influences you have? Because you are so prolific.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times I hear a song and I think, like, I wish we had a song like that in our live repertoire. And a lot of bands that I see live influence me too. But one of the ones I always come back to is NRBQ because I feel
interesting.
Like, yeah, they're one of those bands that they have so many different kinds of music.
Yeah.
They've never lost their sense of fun about the entire thing, you know, as far as I can tell. And I've never seen the old incarnation, the one with Big Al and Tommy Adolino, and obviously can't now, but the new incarnation is great. And it's rare that you see a band where I love the original lineup, but I also love the new lineup too. And I love the old stuff, but I love the new stuff too. And
that is rare.
I'm such a nerd for them. So whenever I find myself writing a song and I can't think of what the chord change would be, I do say, like, what would NRBQ do?
Yeah, that's great. That's a good thing to have something to turn to like that.
Yeah. And then part of the other thing I enjoy about doing, doing a radio show, which I know we'll talk more about, is that I'm always listening to new music and listening to it in a way that's a little different where I'm thinking, how would this transition into the next song? Or is this something that I think is right for the show or whatever? And so I'm always learning new songs. And I feel like that started to influence my writing too, where like, I love this Drive By Trucker song. So I want a song like that. I think that would be really fun to play. So I'm going to make one.
So you're like always a student.
I'm always a student. And I don't know how much of that has to do with my own insecurities. It's like, if I can parrot what somebody else is doing, then I don't have to say, oh, this is mine. I'm putting my own thing out there.
Yeah.
You know, but some of it is just pure appreciation too.
Yeah. I there's an old expression, school's never out for the pro. I mean, I think most people that are, take a lot of personal pride in the work they do and they have a good work ethic. I think they're always looking for that. How can I get better at X? How can I, you know what I'm saying? I think smart people do that.
Yeah. Sometimes as part of my like conversation with myself about getting older, I'm always checking in and like saying the day I stop doing that is the day I know it's over. You know,
it won't happen.
Yeah, I hope not. I plan to play until I drop. So,
But you'll always be looking to learn something. It won't happen.
Yeah.
It's not going to, I mean, I sound like, God, like a grandfather or something, which I guess I am. But you're always, that's a mindset thing. You're always searching, you know. Yeah,
I'll tell you, this interview, Craig, is good for my ego. You're so complimentary and you ask such great questions. Like, I feel like a million bucks here.
That's good. Well, you're a very nice person and you're very good at what you do. So it's not hard.
Thank you. So are you.
You're welcome. Well, that's, you know what? I'm working on that. Accepting compliments.
Accepting compliments is very hard.
Very tough. I'm really working. Somebody, a musician in Nashville called me. He goes, he gave me some compliment and I was like, well, blah. He goes, listen to me. I'm going to tell you something because I like you. He said, when someone gives you a compliment, just say, thank you. He said, whatever shit you got going on in your head, is it your problem? You know, like I said earlier, don't make your problem someone else's. If someone, they want to get joy out of, and I said, okay, thank you.
Yeah, because you don't think about the joy that the other person is getting by paying you the compliment. You know, all you feel is your own, embarrassment.
Awkwardness. Yeah. I feel my own awkwardness. Wow. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's exactly what I feel. But I'm even like that, like, I'm getting better. My wife, if she gives me a compliment, I always feel like, oh, thanks, hon.
Yeah.
There's just no reason to feel that way. It's just, that's I'm working on my issues.
Yeah, good. Well, that thread seems to be going throughout this interview. So
it's every interview. Who's not working on their issues? God almighty. You know, sometimes I get people. I had one person on here. I asked them a question, some like maybe it was the mistakes. Like, what mistakes did you make early on in your career? He goes, none. And it was so like I couldn't, it was so not real. I wasn't even going to challenge it. Like, okay, of course you've made no mistakes. Okay, great. Like, you know, talk to you. I'm not going to be your, you know, go to your therapist and fix that one. I'm not.
I don't think they have a therapist.
Probably. Yeah, right. But he was like, I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Someone said to me once that they'd graduated from therapy. I was like, I don't think that's a thing. I don't think that's a thing.
No. That's not possible. I mean, you can change the way you're getting your developmental information or choose to not continue growing. Right.
Right.
But so maybe you're reading a book or you're in a program or whatever for this period of time, but like, yeah, that's kind of the same thing as a guy who said, you know, I've made no mistakes. So, top three desert island discs. Just for right now, because I know that.
Just for right now.
Yeah.
You know, I've been listening to this one a lot, and it sounds like I'm ass-kissing, but I'm not. And it's Fear Not the Obvious by the Yehoos, because I've been listening to it, like, as a student lately about how I can pull off some of those tricks. And I'm not going to lie, when I drive around, sometimes I pretend I'm in the band. I'll be like, this is where I would take my time. Like, I'm Dan Baird or something. But
you know Dan, obviously, right?
What?
You know Dan, right?
You know, I didn't know him. And then we did that cruise and he's so great.
Yeah.
And we were playing an NRBQ song on stage, and behind my back, Roscoe gave him the guitar. So I turned, there's a picture of this moment where I realized he's playing with me. And it was
That's, he's a really nice guy. I had him on the show, and that's why I met Roscoe.
What
lovely guy. First class human being, man. Really cool.
Oh, he gave me, I'm not going to tell you what the compliment is, because I feel like if I say it out loud, somehow it becomes less pure, but he paid me.
No, don't say it.
He told me that I had a really good right hand.
I'm sure you do.
Well, yeah, right. But it's for a rhythm guitar player. I mean, that's such a huge compliment.
Huge. Totally.
And it comes from him.
Yeah.
And I carry that around with me. I swear to you, I think of it at least once a week.
Hey, let me tell you, that's a great thing, man. You're having a day where you don't feel you play good, or you're up on stage. That guy wouldn't say that. He wouldn't say that.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully it's okay with him that I shared it with the general.
If it's not, let me know. I'll edit it out.
I'm sure it's okay.
That's cool. Yeah, he's a very nice guy. All right, the Yehoos, Fear Not the Obvious. What else?
Yeah. NRBQ, All Hopped Up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God. Jerry Lee Lewis Live at the Star Club.
Wow. I think that's the first Jerry Lee Lewis answer.
So he's such a horrible person. You know, we know this, and yeah, he did marry his 13-year-old cousin, and it's getting harder and harder for me to separate artists from the bad shit that they've done. But I know that record so well, and I've listened to it so many times and feel like it really does embody rock and roll in a way that a lot of live records don't, that I put that on my list, sure.
That's very benevolent of you. Jerry Lee Lewis Live at the Star Club, NRBQ All Hopped Up, and the Yehoos, Fear Not the Obvious.
Do you see something missing from all of those?
Country.
How about Woman?
Yeah, country, women. Well, I just because you're a woman, I'm not automatically thinking you should be listening to women. You know,
no, I don't think so either. But I guess the kind of music that I like if we could sum up those three desert island discs and make a record that sounds like what I like, that's what I try to play. You know,
yeah,
I try to fill a niche that maybe someone hasn't filled yet. That's a woman doing those.
Yeah, and I think you're doing a good job of that. You're pretty visceral.
Yeah.
I think and it's honest. Good. It's important. You know?
Yeah. There's, you know, I'm far enough into this where I'm happy to be able to say at the end of the day, like, well, we really did do what we wanted. We did our best and it didn't bring us fame and fortune, but that's okay. You know?
It might bring you a ton of fame. You just don't know.
Well, I take comfort from those stories that you'll read, like while you're on the John for a second. It was like, so-and-so didn't start painting masterpieces
so cool.
until they were 50.
Let me tell you, you are so cool. This is great. Oh my God.
I'm not going to lie to you. That's where I often read that shit.
Yeah. That's the only time I'm on social media.
Yeah.
Yeah. Best decision you ever made.
Getting sober. Yeah. Oh my God. Hands down. And having my child. But I couldn't have done a good job with that if I didn't get sober. Yeah.
How has motherhood changed you? Or like, what have you learned about yourself through being a mom? Because again, it is so difficult.
I'm way more patient, I think, than I used to be.
That's great.
I do try to, children are so tender and so sweet and so kind that I try to be more like that in my everyday life. You know, I learned so much from my son and the way he treats me and the way he treats his friends. I'm so lucky to have such a good kid.
Yeah.
But he's very kind. And there was a little boy in his class whose parents were getting divorced and he was going for his first weekend at his dad's. And I guess he had said to my son that he felt a little nervous. And so my son was getting in the car and he said, "Don't worry, you're not alone."
Wow.
You know, like shit like that.
That's really, wow, that's really cool.
That's how I want to be. So
that's very cool.
I would say that's what I've learned is just to try and be more, I don't want to say natural, but more open.
Yeah, that's really cool. Man, that's a good kid.
He's
all
a
right.
Good.
Tough question.
Yeah.
What do you like most about yourself?
I think that I am at my very core a really good person. I think that I'm a good friend. I'm a good parent. I'm a good partner. And I don't know. I value my character very much. I work hard to maintain it.
That's great. That is, yeah, I think if you work hard, that's the only way to value it in a sense, you know?
It's like a tapestry or a sculpture. Like I'm always adding to it or taking things away, learning that something doesn't work or I need to modify something else. But you have to have good feelings about yourself and faith in yourself or else you just cannot do anything else.
I agree. Tell me.
I can't wait to see what's coming next.
Tell me something about yourself that people might be surprised to hear or find a little odd.
Oh, God. I always think the worst thing is going to happen in the world. If I'm like crossing the street, I think of 50 different ways that I might die in the next 30 seconds. If there's a knife on the counter, I go through the whole scenario of where I like lost my mind, picked up the knife and stabbed somebody. Like I have all these micro catastrophe thoughts every day, all day.
Wow. How do you manage that? Holy shit.
That's what the therapy's for.
Yeah. To shut the tone down. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like that direct behavioral therapy or whatever, where you just catastrophize everything and then you have to talk yourself down. But I'm so used to it. So I do that all day long.
Yeah.
Except when I'm playing a show, then you're too in the moment.
So you're present when you're playing 100%. Yeah. Interesting.
You can be present and still have those thoughts. I think like I see the knife is there. I am present in this moment. I'm just leaving for 1 second to protect myself and the ones I love, you know? So that's a weird thing I think about me.
Funny. My wife is a little bit like that. And sometimes she'll go through a scenario and I'll be like, babe, I'm exhausted. Like you just like, where the fuck did that come from? Like, I'm just listening to this. Like there's no way reality could happen because it's like, I'm exhausted hearing it. It's not possible to have happened.
Imagine having to think about it.
Yeah. You know, oh, she does. And I'm always like, man, it's right here, babe.
I wonder if that's a woman thing, if we just are trying to like a protection of the young situation or something.
I don't know. I thought of that when you said it. I'm like, God, it ends like that. Yeah. She'll have the wildest shit. I'm like, Wow. Like, how did that even enter your mind?
You know, what's even more of a mind fuck is when one of them comes true, you know, like,
yeah,
Trump becoming president. I was like, oh my God, this is, there's no way this is blah, blah, blah. I thought of all the chain of events that was going to happen. And then it happened. And I was like, see?
Okay. That's totally different. That's a 50-50 statistical chance. There's like 0% chance that the knife is going to fly up, circle around the kitchen and stab you.
I mean,
that's like, you know, I mean, I guess it can happen. Anything can happen. But the the statistical likelihood is probably a lot lower than any A or B candidate getting elected.
But you hear stories of like crazy stuff happening, you know.
I don't.
Next time I find one, I'm going to email it to you.
Email it to me. Yes. Email, say, Cray, or text me, you know, hey, look at this. And then actually don't, because I don't want to start thinking about that.
Did you happen to see, this is a good example, this bird, it was some sort of hawk or eagle. It was on a beach in a southern state. I'm going to go with South Carolina. And it dropped down and picked up what looked like a shark and flew away with it. And it turns out it's like some kind of fish that resembles a shark, but it was like 4 feet. And just in the moment, this person was shooting this beautiful beach video, a hawk jumped down, grabbed a shark, and then flew away. So now we've got fucking birds that could pick up a small child. Sharks are in these waters, and they're conspiring here. You don't think that's worrisome?
They're conspiring. See, that's where you made the jump to like like imaginary world. The other stuff, yeah, that's just science. But like they're conspiring.
Yeah. Yeah,
but my wife does that, so don't feel bad. Yeah, and she's
wonderful, I keep it person. In check.
Yeah, and like literally, like something almost like that, and I'll be like,
give her a fist bump for me.
I will. Yeah, I'm like, holy shit, how do you? I'm like, you got to relax, and she's yeah.
But it doesn't hurt, and it doesn't feel bad. I think it's just the way of dealing with a world that you see is out of control, and you're trying to think of every possibility so that it won't happen somehow. Like you're protectively thinking against it.
Yeah, I see. Because it doesn't. She doesn't feel bad either. I feel a mess when she says, "I'm like, what is?" I'm like, you know, I'm like,
no, I don't. It doesn't. Yeah. I think if I didn't think that, I would feel freaked out.
You'd feel freaked out. Yeah. All right. I see a couple of chapters in with your therapist
here. Yeah. She's very chill. She never, obviously therapists aren't allowed to judge, but she has a great poker face. And so I'll tell her stuff that I think is so horrific. And she'll be like, yeah, okay.
That's interesting. Who's had the biggest influence on you, both musically and personally?
Who's had the biggest influence on me personally? You know, I don't know as I can say that there's one person that's had a influence on me personally, other than, you know, my mom is a big impact on me. It's her voice I hear in my head when I make a choice. But as you get a little bit older, you meet people who aren't your parents who have a big impact on you. I think Roscoe's had a really big impact on me, not just musically speaking, but in terms of making me feel like he's just really, really smart about the music industry. He's smart about people's attitudes and their character. And I've tried to learn from him as much as I can never turn down good advice. So
that's cool.
He's been really helpful to me. I worked with a guy called Paul Coldery and made a couple records with him. He was a big influence on me musically in terms of showing me that I had a lot more that I was capable of than I thought. But more than anything, this is sounds so something, but just the people that we play for every fucking day, like those people are so nice and they don't have to come to the show. And they might have a shitty job or something shitty in their life, but they take those 3 hours out of their day. They come pay their money and then they come and say nice things to you too. Like, that's amazing. And the alchemy that you can get going in a room on a good night. I don't know how that happens, but when everybody's there and everybody's having a great time, it's a good night. Everyone's playing well. You just like levitate. That's a communion with people that I have not found anywhere else.
That is probably the best example of like gratitude that I've heard in 750 interviews, really. Cause that's what that is. No, honestly, that was really cool. That was nice that you have that much reverence for your listeners.
Well, people do unbelievable things too. Like, people have done everything from bring me a cake on my birthday to our van broke down. We did a GoFundMe. Within a day, we had the money to get it fixed again. People do stuff like, you know, send me a birthday card. When my son was born, they sent me baby gifts.
Oh my God. That is so cool.
And they don't want anything in return. You just keep being you and making music, which is what I love to do anyway. So,
wow, that is really cool.
That's wonderful. So social media is really hard for so many reasons, but because it allows me to keep up with all my peeps, I really like it, you know?
Yeah, it is hard for a lot of reasons. It's like really negative at times.
Oh, it's really, really negative. I don't post personal shit on Facebook. I feel like, unless it's something momentous, but, and I try to stay out of the fray because there's no point.
Yeah. Right. Where are you going with that?
Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll dip my toe in the water. If there's something that I see that someone has said that I find personally horrific, and I feel like I'm doing myself a disservice by not saying something, I will go there, but it's so rare. Maybe once every 6 months, I'll say something.
Yeah, it's probably a lot more headaches than you're going to get. And the return on that investment is probably pretty low for the most part.
It absolutely is. But you know, sometimes where it's like, if you don't stand up, you feel bad.
Yeah, I totally get it. Or if you're having a shitty day and it just pushes your button and triggers you for something right then and there, you're like, fuck, I'm throwing down.
Yeah. Well, you can call somebody names on Facebook that you can't call somebody names to their face.
You have any non-musical superpowers?
No. I can drive. I mean, this is music related, but I can parallel park a 15-passenger van like nobody's business, even on the left-hand side.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I thought you'd have some superpowers, actually.
I mean, I don't know. I'm an okay cook. I'm a terrible housekeeper. I'm good at driving. And I have a pretty detailed mind for song lyrics. I can remember songs from when I was 5 or musicals from when I was 10. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't write. You have to, if you write that much, people that write that much are pretty intellectually smart. You can't write songs, good songs, that many. Like, you got to be pretty smart to do that.
Or at least really into noticing the world and what people do in it, you know?
Yeah.
But I love story songs. Like, you know, Springsteen, I think, is my prime example of someone who really does a great job of setting the stage of, like, you can see the characters in his songs. You know what it feels like to be there. You know what it looks like. And he just takes you away for those 4 or 10 minutes, you know, and that I try to do that too. So I think you're right. It is partially about being intellectual, but also just about being so curious about what's going on in the world.
Yeah. But I think it's definitely curiosity, but you got to be smart, you know?
Yeah.
Any hobbies outside of music?
I used to be really into painting and art in general. And that was something that fell by the wayside after I had my child. So
yeah, that's going to happen.
You know, it's something that I did my whole life and I haven't done it in so long. And I always think, today is the day where I pick it up again and then it's not the day.
Yeah. What is this? 2020, like probably 2028 or 2029. That's like the ETA.
Right. When he moves out, I'll start over again. You know, part of the pandemic is that I had to get a job. I had to get a job. I drive delivery for the airport.
That's cool.
So it's no contact, which I feel good about, but I had to just do something because where there's no gigs and I can't wait. So, what were we just talking about? I lost my train of thought.
Superpowers. Yeah.
Driving.
Riding, hobbies outside of music.
Hobbies outside of music, painting, 2024. Fuck. I don't know what it was. Oh.
You should play this interview in the van as you're driving these people. And then like subtly let them know, this is an interview I did. And I'll be like, Marge.
They have no idea about what I do. It's just a garage.
Is it safe to be in the car?
She's talking about knives flying. Yeah. No, it's so funny. It's like a warehouse down at the airport. All these guys are like ripping butts. They're like, hey. And then I just go down there in my little like mini dress and sneakers.
For you.
I got the package. I'm just driving around. I listen to all my favorite records.
Good for you. It's good you're doing something. Tour. Good that you're doing something that you could tolerate. It's hard to have a job when you're used to playing music, you know?
Well, it's also an interesting little slice of life too. You know, like people talk about John Prine and how he learned so much about his songwriting from when he was a mailman.
Oh, and I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So, I feel like I'm learning a lot about, like, I go all over the place. Sometimes it's to like BJ's and sometimes it's to like a dude's driveway in the middle of New Hampshire. It's a very unusual job, but I'm always alone. I don't talk to anyone.
Is that creepy?
No, okay. Because it's sort of like the best of both worlds where I love to drive and I'm so used to driving for tour, but I don't have the bandmates in the back irritating me. So, and I get to keep all the money.
Yeah. It's the antithesis of what you're normally driving around doing, sharing all the money and getting annoyed. So now you're all.
Yeah. Stop it. Stop breathing that way.
Ah. toughest decision you've had to make or most difficult thing you've had to do.
You know, obviously getting sober was a tough decision, and I think we've covered that territory, but one of my other decisions that I struggle with all the time is whether or not it's okay for my son to be away, for me to be away while I'm playing music. Obviously, we're not dealing with that right now, but
yeah,
I try not to go for more than 2 weeks or 10 days, and then I come home, and we've missed out on a bunch of opportunities that we could have done, but I don't feel like we missed out so much as we hopefully just put them off till later, because being home with him and checking in with him is really important. But I'm always like looking at him for signs of trauma. Like, are you okay? Am I scarring you for life? But he seems okay for right now.
Am I scarring you for life?
I know. If he starts like murdering cats, we'll know.
Yeah, that's a pretty good sign. Cats. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the hallmark, isn't it?
Yeah, I think cats or pet, you know, pet.
Guinea pigs. We only have a cat, so.
Yeah. all right. So here's two more questions. What has been the biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years? And how much of that change has been intentional? And how much is just a part of aging?
Oh, the biggest change in my personality has been I'm so much less selfish than I used to be. And part of that is because I'm a parent. And part of that is because of sobriety, but it's all been intentional, you know, like, I don't think I always thought before about what consequences my actions or words would have for other people, but I try to be very conscious of that now because I know how much I internalize what people put forth to me. My friend and my bestie and I always talk about this where it's like, does she hate me? Why would she say that? And we really come to the decision that like people don't think when they're talking, you know, they just any opportunity to exhibit kindness, I'm down with. Absolutely. But so much of that has to do with having a little kid and what you're trying to teach them. But it makes the world so much easier to be in if you're just trying to be kind and be empathetic. And don't get me wrong, I can be a fucking bitch, like easy, no problem. So
I think you'd have to work at it. Someone would have to push you pretty hard, no?
I do, but you know, just like anything else, family members, friends, there's certain buttons that people push that you just revert right back to that. But that's been the biggest change is I've just tried to be more, live more intentionally with a little more kindness and just really think about other people.
That was a really kind of you to answer. It was very kind of you to answer. That was such an honest answer.
Thank you.
You know, I just want to tell people you've been like so zen. But listen to her music and she is tearing it up. And I'll tell you where to find it in a minute, but you're very nice and I really appreciate, I'm so happy for you that you've gotten sober and done all these cool things and you're a mom and stuff. And, you know, thank you, Craig. But the moment I've been waiting for.
Oh, the belching. All right, yeah, wait a minute.
Okay. So on Sarah's website, it says, on Wikipedia, I apologize. It says, doesn't say she burps, and it says she's an unapologetic stage belcher. Now, to me, that means like you're up on stage just belching, which I probably is not the truth.
No, I swear, like what happened is one time I burped on stage and then someone added it to Wikipedia. I don't think I can burp on stage, right? I mean, I don't think I can burp for you now, but I will show you a creepy thing that I can do.
Yeah, show me that. Okay, cool.
Okay. So if ever this music career doesn't work out and they're casting for the next Aliens movie, wait, let me get it right.
Yeah.
Okay, I just want you to focus on the neck area.
Okay.
That's one. And then I know that more. This is a... It's a PG. I'm trying to make this show PG, but I did get a new witch tattoo. But what I realized, the witch is here.
Right.
But the only way to make the witch fly is to make the hand job movement.
How late at night did you stay up figuring this out?
It was actually on stage. I was like, oh, I was doing this. Everyone's like, wait a minute. Hold on.
That's hilarious. You have some interesting tattoos. Like, is there anyone that you want to talk about that's like that you really vibe with?
Yes.
They're
all by the same guy. Most of them. This guy, Ian Adams, who lives here in Boston, who's a man that I used to play in a band with. But we have our Broken Singles tattoo, which is just the Broken Singles logo.
Oh, okay.
And then I think... you know, this is my sobriety tattoo here. It's a crucible. So whatever you put in a crucible won't burn. It's on my drinking hand. So I put it there to remind myself.
I saw that. I was going to ask you about what is a crucible?
A crucible is a receptacle that you can start a fire in. It's like what you use in chemistry class and it will never burn. You can do a chemical reaction inside it and nothing will happen. So it was sort of a metaphor for me of like, I can withstand anything and I'm not going to pick up the drink.
Very cool. That's good.
And then this one is I got it when I got divorced. It was like my wedding picture. And then now I'm dead. So it was a divorce present to myself. I'm a bride no longer.
Oh my God. You know, I think I'm the only man in America. I have no tattoos.
Yeah. We've got two bandmates with no tattoos too.
Really? Yeah. I was in the gym one day. And I look around, it was in the afternoon. I never go in the afternoon because there's way too many young people. And I was there one day because I didn't go. And I looked around, everybody had a wife beater on and they had tattoos and a beard.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was amazed. I mean, everybody had on a beard and had tattoos and beard. So, you know, I think I'm officially out to pasture now because I never did.
Well, for a little bit of time, I tried to do online dating. And that was like everybody's profile picture is like dude with a wife beater and tattoos and the hair.
In the beard. Yeah.
Terrible.
But that's how you got to meet people, I guess. It's like quick. It's much more efficient than like going out, I would imagine.
Well, especially if you don't spend time in bars, you know. Yeah. I tried it a couple of times and I had one really horrible experience. And then I had one that was fine.
Oh, that's cool.
The guy asked, he was like, I was really looking for someone small and blonde. I was like, what the fuck did you click on my picture for? What is wrong with you?
Is that what he said to you?
Yes.
What a douche. I mean, that's like
maybe you could be my wing woman. What?
Is that what he said? I was looking for someone small and blonde, but I clicked on you're tall?
I'm 5'8", yeah.
I clicked on a tall brunette. Oh, and how do you say something that stupid to somebody? I mean, I haven't dated in years, but I mean, you don't have to, you know, that's amazing. You don't have to be a weatherman to know it's raining out either. You know? Anyway, listen, you're the best. You're really sweet. You're very kind and you're really cool. And I like that you are yourself. And that is the most important thing. So thank you for giving us that gift today.
Oh, Craig, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. You're so kind and just so nice and funny. I really like talking to you.
Likewise. You come back on when you come out with your record so we can promote it. All right.
Okay.
Let me tell people where to find you. Okay. First of all, Sarah Borges, her last name is Borges. And if you follow her on Facebook at Sarah Borges Music, she does live streams like weekly.
More like monthly. I've been slacking, but we're going to ramp it up a little bit, I think. So,
well, whatever you're doing, she does live streams. Just follow her on her Facebook page. On Instagram, this is secret code, Sarah Borges 36. Her website, which is pretty robust, it's good. It's sarahborges.com. Again, B-O-R-G-E-S, and it's Sarah with an H, S-A-R-A-H. Now, she also does a radio show on Wednesday mornings, 11 a.m. Eastern time, on Gimme Country. So talk about, how did you get into that? I know you have a degree in radio, but how did you get into that, and what are you doing, and what do you like about it?
You know, they asked me to do a guest DJ spot, and they have a lot of other DJs of sort of our scene, like Jesse Dayton does one, Chuck Prophet does one, a lot of other people do them. And then the guest DJ spot sort of evolved into a weekly spot, but I love it. It's so fun. You know, it's like making a playlist for your friends. I get to talk a little bit and say some bullshit. And then the chat is really fun during the radio show because we have kind of a dedicated group. So we all meet up and then we talk about what's happened over the week. And one of the ladies is in England. It's so fun.
Oh, that's cool. So you could you chat with the listeners while the show's going on.
Yeah. And they give me recommendations or they tell me, oh, I saw the artist you're playing one time live. It was wonderful. And I learn a lot of stuff too.
Oh, that's really cool. Can you curse on that radio?
Oh, fuck yeah. They let you say anything. I've gotten political. I've said the F-bomb a bunch of times. They really let you do whatever you want to.
I'm so relieved you curse. I don't think we've had a woman who cursed on the show. You curse more than me this show, which is excellent. I mean, shit. Like, I felt like I was on vacation, which is, you know, fucking excellent.
Yeah. Curses, well-timed curses. I mean, my son helped me clean the toilet the other day. He flipped the lid down. And you know that yucky part behind the bowl where it attaches to the body?
Oh, yeah.
So we got there and he was like, oh shit. And I was like, exactly. Like if ever a time to say, oh shit has come up, it was that one. You can't be saying that, but I hear you.
Yeah. You know that was a problem because I cursed pretty badly and I'm from the Bronx and it was just, oh, I know. But when like your daughter's like, fuck man. I'm like, when she's like 9, it's like, and my wife would be like, see, you know, so that was my bad.
Yeah.
Only because
Now they're pros.
Well, she's tough as nails, so it doesn't matter. She's, you know, conquering the world. Anyway, listen, is there anything else you want to promote or talk about?
No, I feel like I should interview you, though, because I've answered all the questions, and I have a lot of questions about you now.
To be continued. Okay. Thank you so much for everything. I really appreciate it. No, seriously, come back on when you get your next album.
Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this, please share it on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Thanks very much to Sarah Borges. Again, let me tell you where to find her online. It's Sarah Borges Music on Facebook. She does live streams. Go check her out, support her, and say hello on there. Her website is sarahborges.com. Radio, Instagram, Sarah Borges 36, and the radio show. If you can go on there, you can chat with her and ask her directions and, you know, whatever, tattoo advice, whatever you like. Wednesday mornings, 11 a.m. Eastern time on Gimme Country. It's on internet.
Yeah, you can get it on the phone or you can just use their website.
Great. Gimme Country, G-I-M-M-E Country. I said internet, like I'm from the Bronx still.
internet. Dude, it's on the Wi-Fi.
It's on the Wi-Fi. Most important, man, especially nowadays, remember that happiness really is a choice. So choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I am out. Sarah, you're the best. Thanks for everything.
Bye, Craig. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everyone Loves Guitar. If you did, make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com/subscribe and subscribe to the audio podcast and to our very active YouTube community. And if you have any comments, please write me at everyonelovesguitar.com/hello. We'll see you on the next episode. Until then, make sure you choose happiness, relax, and have as much fun as possible.